up.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on SB Nation Radio. Here we are on a Wednesday morning where the celebration in New Orleans. Oh, I don't know if you could still hear it, getting the number one pick and winning the Zion Williamson sweepstakes. Every now and then the NBA has a player that everyone thinks is going to be a game changer, a franchise-changing individual. Sometimes we go into the draft where we don't really have that, and there's a couple of guys that could go number one. But then you have a guy like Zion who people think, if you can get him, this is the building piece to a future championship, or at least contending for a championship. And New Orleans, coming from a couple of months ago where they had to get rid of Anthony Davis and didn't know what that was going to look like and didn't know what their team was going to look like going forward, now holds a lot of cards. They have Zion Williamson if they want him, and likely they will. They also have Anthony Davis, who they either A, can really sit down and say, do you really, really, really want to be traded? And if Anthony Davis, who reportedly says he does, if Anthony Davis says yes, they can parlay that into either a pick or some other assets that can help Zion build the Pelicans back up. It's a phenomenal turn of events. But at the same time, think about where the NBA has, you know, what's been the center point of the talks off the court during the regular season. It was the trade deadline and Anthony Davis and the Pelicans. So this is almost a little poetic, if you will, that the Pelicans would end up with the number one pick last night, much to the grief of the New York Knicks. Now, the Knicks didn't really lose out on this. I mean, they can keep the third pick and get R.J. Barrett, who's a good player, a really good player that they can help build around if they're going to get Durant, if they're going to get Kyrie, if they're even going to trade that pick for Anthony Davis. The building of the Knicks is still on the table. They may have been disappointed and upset that they lost Zion in a possibility of teaming him up with a Durant and Irving or whoever else they're thinking about. But RJ Barrett's not a bad, you know, consolation prize. Plus, you're still one of the teams that's being talked about as major free agency comes around. So don't weep for the Knicks as much as the Knicks fans are weeping for themselves, because it's really not the end of the world. The Pelicans, though, what a turnaround from a couple of months ago when they were in the ashes and now have risen up. SB Nation Radio.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Yesterday I told you the story. Joe Flacco at the Broncos said, I'm not here to mentor, I'm here to win games. I think it's a fine... That's fine to say. I don't have any problem with it. Oh boy, do a lot of people have problems with it. As it sort of simmered in the media for about a day, oh boy, were a lot of people angry at this. And I take two steps back on certain things like this, because I think the initial reaction, and I was saying this yesterday, is that the initial reaction is always like, hey, listen, everybody should be a team player. Everybody should be on the same page when it comes to helping everybody to win as many games as possible. And one day Joe Flacco, for example, might break a leg and he would want the Broncos to continue to win games. And if Drew Locke is going to be the next guy up, then Drew Locke should be as prepared as possible. And Joe Flacco should do whatever he possibly can to make sure that Drew Locke is ready to go in case that day ever comes where he can't play anymore. Right? And that I completely understand. I completely understand that. But man, when you really know the business of the National Football League, I can get where Joe Flacco was coming from. But boy, he was taking some hits yesterday. As that story really started to percolate, a lot of people were not happy with the way that was. But again, I come at it as a different, it is a different angle. I think it's got to be hard when you've lost one job already to the most popular guy in town, which is always the backup quarterback when things aren't going right. And I think Flacco is trying to set himself with the Broncos as, I'm your number one guy. Don't think of me as the placeholder until Drew Locke is ready. I'm your number one guy. So I get where he's coming from. But boy, he was taking some serious hits yesterday for this.
Yeah, but there's nothing worse than just knowing that you're a seat filler.
That's terrible. It's a terrible position to be in.
Yeah, and I mean, and you know, listen, the quarterback is the captain on the field always, and you know he demands to have respect. I mean, how are his own players going to respect him if everyone knows, like, just any second now he'll lose the job and it'll be Drew's job.
Well, you know, John Elway wasn't exactly thrilled when Dan Reeves drafted Tommy Maddox.
Right.
All right, John Elway didn't go, oh, it's okay. No, it's all good as long as he can help us win football games. And
Brett Favre wouldn't retire.
Right. Brett Favre was not going to go, oh, no, okay, maybe this young Aaron Rodgers guy is pretty decent at this. Maybe I should stop doing, you know. Look, I remember thinking, John Elway's not going to draft a quarterback in the first round because that's exactly what they did with Tommy Maddox, and he wasn't happy with that. He was not going to do that to Flacco. But he did have an opportunity to get Locke in the second round and said, well, he's too good to pass up. I mean, now I'm going to get him in the second round. I might as well. I did like him. I liked him enough. I just didn't like to take him in the first round with the 9th overall pick or the 10th pick, whatever they had. But Flacco is trying to do something in Denver that he didn't really have to do in Baltimore until just recently, right? When he was the starter in Baltimore, do we know any of the backup quarterbacks for Joe Flacco that were breathing down his neck all those years that he was going to the playoffs and the year he won a Super Bowl? No. But then we got Lamar Jackson, and all of a sudden it was, the Ravens might want to go in a different direction now, right? Oh, look at this. And that's eventually what they did. Flacco gets to Denver, and he immediately started to be the alpha dog, right? There were a lot of quotes where he was saying, I'm the quarterback. You know, they asked him about, you know, being, you know, drafting a quarterback in the first round. What do you think about the Broncos drafting a quarterback in the first round? And he says, well, I don't really control those things, but I'm the quarterback. I'm the starter. You know, like he was pushing himself to say, listen, there's not going to be a battle. There's not going to be a quarterback controversy. I am the quarterback. I'm the starter. I am here to start. That's it. End of story. So he's been more assertive, and I don't remember hearing this from him in his early days in Baltimore at any time in Baltimore because he didn't really have to. But now he feels like, okay, listen, I lost my job once. I'm not going to lose it again. But Case Keenum, when the Broncos signed Case Keenum and brought him in, Keenum thought he was going to have the job, right? And then he couldn't do it, so they went and got another guy. What Flacco is worried about is, okay, I may struggle. Think about all of the new elements Denver's going through right now. New OC, new head coach, new different guys on the offensive line, right? Brand new quarterback, right? There's a lot of new things that are going on with this team that went 6-10 last year. All right, so what happens when they lose two out of three or three out of four? They go through this stretch where they're not winning games. What if they lose at home twice or whatever? There's going to be a lot of heat on Flacco, but Flacco is trying to establish, listen, I'm not going anywhere unless I'm hurt, right? If I throw two interceptions in the game, you're not going to bench me for a rookie. So what he's trying to do is trying to say, look, I'm not going to be responsible for the development of the guy that is going to breathe down my neck that you guys all are going to want to take my job when I start messing up, which is likely to happen in a 16-game season with all of these brand new elements that are on this football team. Right? I mean, I don't think even Joe Flacco thinks he's going to play perfect football for 16 games, but fans are crazy. Right? Doesn't matter what you root for. Oh, there's fan bases. Even Jacksonville has some crazy fans. They're all crazy. They all want something different when things are going wrong. But in the end, maybe except New England, but in the end, Flacco is trying to protect his job first. Because no one, this is the thing about the NFL. if you don't protect your job, no one protects it for you, right? You have to perform and you have to play, and that's it. That's the way it goes. Flacco's worried about the development of Drew Lock on a basis where people are like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe he should play. Maybe he should start. I mean, goodness gracious. Kyle Orton. I remember when I covered the team, there was all of these reports coming out of Dove Valley during practice, right? And you could see it in the when the media could go, that Tim Tebow was really struggling throwing the ball in practice. And there was like whispers among teammates, you know, there that, man, this kid doesn't really throw a good football. Like, he doesn't throw an NFL pass. Like, maybe in college he got away with it, but in the NFL, he doesn't throw an NFL ball. So there were always these whispers about it. And Kyle Orton was the quarterback, and he was getting so frustrated with all this Tebow talk. And all of a sudden, the crowds were booing him like crazy. He was losing games and chanting Tebow's name. And Tebow and Fox would be asked questions, and he'd be like, no, Kyle's our quarterback. Kyle's our quarterback. Kyle's our quarterback. Until one day he finally went, Tim's going to start. And Tebow won. Tebow won games. He looked awful doing it, but he won games. Nobody wants the backup quarterback's name chanted in a stadium of losing. Nobody does. And Flacco was like, I'm not going to be participating in that. I'm not going to be participating in the aid of that conversation. So I don't blame him. I don't blame him at all. Now, listen, on the flip side, I get it. I get it. Because when you're a fan, doesn't matter what you're a fan of, take any team. When you're a fan, you want everybody on that team to be as into winning as you are, and you hope they all are. And that's not to say Flacco isn't. So your thought is, yes, make everybody better. Because if you make everybody better, when the ship starts to sink a little bit and Drew Lock comes in, he's even more ready to help take the team where they have to go. But at the same time, Flacco's like, listen, I got a good 3-year situation here. I can make some even more money. I'm not going to get cut after the first year because you all fell in love with Drew Lock and I helped in the development of a guy who's going to take my job. Drew Lock's going to take my job eventually, but not tomorrow. So in a way, I don't blame him. But we live in this, hey, listen, we live in the name on the front rather than the name on the back kind of culture. And that's the way we are. So I can understand why people are mad about this. But at the same time, I understand the business better. I get it. I get what Flacco's trying to do. But boy, he was taking some arrows yesterday. And by the way, when did Joe Flacco take national arrows? Did he do anything in Baltimore? He was kind of vanilla, wasn't he? I don't remember making any controversial statements or controversial. I don't remember doing other than wanting to get paid. The conversation around Flacco that drew people's interest was, is he an elite quarterback? Remember that conversation? And then he won a Super Bowl and people were like, yeah, still. Yeah.
Well, I mean, just. It still feels like he doesn't get any respect.
Yeah, right.
I mean, once a year when the playoffs roll around, we bring it up, especially right before the AFC Championship game, that he's the one outlier over the last.
He is. We're
coming up like on 20 years now.
That's right.
AFC quarterbacks to be in the Super Bowl.
That is exactly right.
It's been three and then him.
And this is a guy, let me tell you something. This is a guy, if you remember mid-2000s, right? Not mid-2000s, early 2010, 2011, whatever. Like, this is a guy that would beat the Patriots. Like, he beat the Patriots twice in the postseason. He almost beat them three times. He threw a pass to Lee Evans that dropped in the end zone. He could have beaten them three times in the postseason. He beat Peyton Manning and the Broncos in Denver. He beat the Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers. I want to say he beat, let's see, who else did he beat en route to that Super Bowl? He beat the Broncos and he beat the Patriots. But he has played very well in the postseason. The knock on him was always regular season play. But there was a time where, man, Joe Flacco and the Ravens with their defense and the way he game managed and played well enough in the postseason, they could run the ball with Ray Rice back in the day. They were bad team to meet in the playoffs. They were really tough. And then there was never really any controversy. Like, he never really made national news, but he wasn't on the level of eliteness. You never felt like he was an elite. Then he won a Super Bowl and they're like, fine, here's your 20 something million a year. And that's what they, you know, because you win a Super Bowl, you kind of get that. All right, 800-777-2907. Coming up, the PGA Championship and Tiger Woods. Is it Tiger in the field, or has everybody else still been able to step up in the wake of what's happened at the Masters? That's next on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, when your battery goes dead, everything can come to a stop. Don't take a risk on a dead battery. O'Reilly Auto Parts provides free battery testing. If your battery does need to be replaced, professional parts people can help find the exact battery that fits your car or truck with free installation. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Next hour, Cecil and Prince Fielder are going to join us. We're going to have them both on at the same time. We'll talk some baseball with them. That should be fun. A little father-son baseball talk.
Of course.
Be neat. Talk to them about that. About some pretty good father and son career together.
Is it the one best father-son career?
Probably the Griffies, the best.
Griffies? What about Bonds?
I'd have to really look into that. The Bonds would be right up there. Barry, that would be right up there.
Extend it to other sports. Do we go Currys? Do we go Mannings?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
The best father-son.
Who's the best father-son sports combination ever? See, you know what would be the problem with this? Is that I would be bringing up stuff and then some hockey guy will go, oh, no, this and this. And I'd be like, I've never even heard of them. Something along those lines. Yeah, got to be. Archie and Peyton, that's pretty good. What else?
Well, here's a fun list.
All right, you have a list?
Somebody put down the 10 best father-son sports combos of all time.
Okay, go ahead.
Who knew that? This is what they knew what we were going to be talking
Amazing
about.
Amazing that the internet has this kind of thing.
Number one, they have on their list, the Mannings.
That seems reasonable.
You got Archie, Peyton, and Eli. I mean, you got four Super Bowls right there.
I remember, I have this Archie Manning thing. I remember as a kid, I collected football cards. And I remember Archie Manning played for the Saints. And the Saints were really terrible. And I remember thinking Archie Manning was a bad quarterback as a kid. Because he played for the bad football team.
Yep.
And that's how I looked as I'm a kid. I don't know anything else until the adults in my life quickly reminded me how really good Archie Manning is.
No,
as a football player,
I always thought the same thing. I always thought, he's on a terrible football team, so he must be a terrible quarterback.
That's right, exactly. And then so again, I was reminded how good Archie was. So I go from there. I would say Archie and Peyton.
Number two on the list, they have the Bonds.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you brought up the Bonds, and I said the Griffies, and he brought up the Bonds, I'm like, yeah, I'm thinking Barry and Bobby are probably better than
Ken and Ken.
Ken and Ken.
I mean, they have the Griffies down as number three, but I mean, the thing they have with Bobby Bonds, he was the first 30-30 guy.
Yep.
And he did it five times, a mark only equaled by his son, Barry.
That's pretty amazing.
That's actually kind of cool that they have they share a record together. And then obviously you have the Griffies, who I remember vividly they got to play in the same game together.
They did get to play in the same game together. That's right.
And they hit back-to-back home runs.
Yep, that's right.
Number four, which I'm surprised we didn't think of this, the Earnhardts.
Yeah, the Earnhardts.
Because I guess we don't really ever consider that.
That's true.
It kind of gets out of the idea of sport, but it is sport.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're talking.
Totally forgot about that.
Talking one of the most iconic drivers of all time.
There's a commercial out that Dale's doing now for some truck or whatever he's doing, where they use the Jim Croce song "I've Got a Name," and it's really good. It's a really good ad. It's got a lot of vintage footage of his dad and him when he was a little kid, being in the garage, and them on the racetrack. And there's this one shot of Dale in his eight, Budweiser eight, and his dad's right behind him in the three. It's a really good commercial. It's a well done ad.
So in here to satisfy hockey guy.
Okay.
The holes.
Okay, that I should know. I know Brett Hull and Bobby Hull. I know the Hulls. There's no excuse for that.
Yep.
If you had told me the Jackowitz or something like that, I would have to say, all right, I'll take your word for it. But the Hulls, yeah, I should know that.
Number six, the Currys.
Yeah, the Currys. That's a little higher than I thought. I know Dell was a pretty good player, but that's a little higher than I thought.
Yeah, then, well, I guess we'll have to see who else is on the list. Then you have number seven is kind of interesting. Number seven is the Boones.
Okay.
Baseball.
You
have Ray Boone, the father.
Ray Boone, okay.
Bob Boone, the son.
Right.
And then Brett and Aaron, grandsons.
Oh, that's kind of cheating.
Yeah, you got three generations right there.
Well, that's pretty good.
Number eight on the list would be the Fielders.
Okay, not bad. Not bad.
And then number nine, you have the Berries. Rick Berry, Brett,
Rick Berry
and John.
And Brett. Yep, okay. That's pretty good.
And then rounding out the list, number 10, the Alomars.
All right, the Alomars.
Sandy, right. Roberto, and Sandy Jr.
That's pretty good.
That's a pretty good list.
The Fielders, eighth. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's good for the Fielders.
Should we tell them that? So we looked up best father and son combinations in all the sports, and you guys are eighth, which is pretty good.
List. You see, you know, do they think they should be higher?
Yeah. And let's see, real quick, go back. Can you go back to that list real quick?
Yeah.
Where are they in baseball? Like there was, you mentioned the Bonds.
In terms of baseball,
the Griffies.
Bonds Griffey would be 1-2. The Boones would be 3.
And they're four.
And they're four.
Okay.
They're ahead of the Alomars, who are 5.
Okay, very good.
So they rank higher than the Alomars, but they're below.
Just below the Boones. See, if I tell them that, maybe they'll be like, well, we're better than the Boones.
I think they are better than the Boones. I think what they have over them, and it'd be, I guess, on Prince to have a kid who plays. Because, I mean, for the Boones, it's three generations. You can't get past three generations. It's incredible.
That is incredible, but it is kind of cheating.
It is cheating.
Like, you should either do, if the Fielders are doing father and son, you have to pick a father and a son.
You know, I don't want to get rid of the Boones. Because wouldn't the Ripkins be a better pick? Didn't Cal Sr., didn't he play? I know he was a manager.
I'll have to look that up, but I'm sure he did. I'm sure he has some major league mark, maybe not as deep.
Because Cal Jr. definitely trumps any of the Boones.
Well, yeah. He would definitely carry the water in that statistical category, right? Like, definitely would be the main. This is like when, you know, father son golf tournaments where the son can't play as well, and it's like, well, the dad's good; he'll figure it out. Wow. So yeah. All right, the Fielders, not bad. Eighth on the list of all time father son.
He only played 169 games.
Oh, okay.
Maybe
at least he got in.
Maybe he didn't. It just says manager.
Maybe he didn't play.
I guess not.
He did manage his son, though, didn't he? He was manager of the Orioles. Wasn't he the manager of the Orioles when they went like 0-20 something to start the season? And that I might be thinking somebody else. It was 88, 89.
He was only a minor league player.
Oh, okay. Too bad.
A bummer.
That is a bummer. That is a real bummer. So, but yeah, eighth. Not bad for the Fielders. That'd be good. Cecil Fielder was on the Yankees in 96, the year they won the World Series. I want to ask him about it because that was a weird championship for the Yankees. They really weren't supposed to beat the Braves at all.
No.
And ended up beating beat them in six.
And that ended up sparking off, I guess, a little mini dynasty.
Yeah, a little dynasty. But they were heavy underdogs to the Atlanta Braves. They lost the first two games badly in Yankee Stadium and then won four straight, including three in Atlanta. All right, coming up, I'll get to the PGA Championship with Tiger Woods. And what do the younger golfers think of Tiger Woods? It's coming up next. SB Nation, a good, bad, and the dumb as well on SB Nation AM.
SB Nation AM continues now on SB Nation Radio.
time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb for a Wednesday morning. A day after the lottery. All right,
day
what's
after the lottery. Well, there's no the lottery
day
talk
after
here.
Lottery. No lottery talk here. What's going on?
The
what's the good today?
Of the day? And I'm hoping this pans out the way I want it to pan out. But the NCAA has appointed a working group to examine issues related to student-athlete name, image, and likeness.
Oh, I know. I saw this. I really hope this works out.
Which means that we could have the return of the greatest football video game ever.
That's right. That's correct.
I don't care about jerseys. I don't care about, you know, whatever you're going to slap his face or his jersey, his number on. I just want NCAA football back.
NCAA football was a great game.
Yes.
Man, was it great.
And somebody did a cover art for it, and they had on our boy Trevor Lawrence. It's like, you make this happen before he leaves college.
Oh, I know.
I want to play Trevor Lawrence in college.
Oh, God, it's great. I loved it. It was great. All the stadiums, all the teams. I mean, it was such a good game.
Not only that, but then, you know, then you have an actual off season.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was like
some recruiting.
There was a storyline to whatever you were doing. You know, you work your way up to from being a scrub coach for a AAA team or whatever. Ah, God, a D3 team, that would be fantastic. I hope they come back with it.
I do, too. It could be a while, but it's complicated. I get it. I know that they're worried about where that's leading. I mean, it does open some
precedent.
Pandora box of stuff. But right. Nevertheless, this is what Ed O'Bannon was fighting for when he kind of brought that lawsuit up to begin with, right? Is that, you know, listen, we should be getting a piece of the pie in the first place. And it's likely true. It is a weird, listen, and I know I told this story before about the South Carolina quarterback that had the ponytail, and then yep. South Carolina was selling the ponytail hats. It is weird when you blatantly do that, right? It's one thing to say, we're going to sell Johnny Manziel shirts, but jerseys, and they're the number two, but you know, it's just a two, right? You can make that case as naive as that is, and as sneaky as that is, you still can make it legitimate.
Two,
right? You can still, yep. You can still go down that road, right? Yeah, it's just a jersey with two on it. It doesn't really mean anything. It's not like it has his name on it or anything. But when you blatantly, a student has a ponytail or a student has some sort of look, and your school markets that product and sells that product, that's a little weird to me that yeah. kid can't get a piece of that at all.
I mean, you know, true story. When I first moved to Texas, I thought Johnny Manziel's number was 12 because you can get Texas A&M shirts or jerseys with 12 on it.
Oh
everywhere.
Yeah. The 12th man. Yeah. That's right.
I didn't put two and two together. I was like, number 12, Johnny, you know, Johnny's jersey. Okay.
Yeah.
I was close. But that was one off.
It went off, right? Yeah. Ah, but yeah. So it's. I'm looking forward to seeing where that goes. That's a good.
I hope it does pan out. The bad. I'm a little indifferent about the bad.
Okay.
I don't know if it's bad yet, so I reserve the right to change my mind somewhere down the road. Say in 2022.
2022.
We may revisit this bad and say, you know what? I was wrong. This is actually good.
Okay.
But the bad of the day for now is Disney CEO Bob Iger has revealed Game of Thrones creators David Benioff and D.B. Weiss are working on the Star Wars movie due in 2022.
What Star Wars movie is due in 2022? I thought they were wrapping up the nine. Are they doing these offshoots?
No, they're doing three new Star Wars. The Skywalker saga is over. There's going to be a whole
new.
They
all knew another one.
There's going to be a whole new trilogy.
Okay.
And the rumor has it the trilogy could possibly include Rey, Finn, and Poe.
Okay.
Moving on with the Skywalker saga, just no more Skywalkers. So,
okay. But that's legit.
I'm putting
keep this machine going. It's a $1 billion thing, yeah. So it's not like they're going to turn it off.
No, they're not going to turn it off. Are you kidding? But I'm indifferent because on the one hand they have done some good work, but on the other hand, you know, this season feels very rushed on Game of Thrones.
It does.
That they're just slapping it together. You know, we talked about this yesterday, that they were given the option of, you know, going 10 episodes. HBO probably would have went 12. Probably would have given them, say, hey, how long do you want for this final season? And they opted for, let's give us the shortest amount of time possible.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Exactly.
So just that kind of thinking makes me a little nervous with Star Wars Saga. Because I really don't want it to tank. I know you're not a big fan of where it's been going recently.
No, I haven't. But at the same time, listen, if you give them source material, if you say, because if you know the Star Wars world, the Star Wars universe is very large, it's very big, there's a lot of books and, you know, all sorts of different dark novels, and there's a lot of material there that's beyond the sky. If they're good at that, they can take some of that information. They took George R.R. Martin's books and made them really good TV shows. They wrote for the screen very well. It's when they had to write original stuff that people have had problems with. The character arcs aren't there. Things don't logically, there's no logic to some of the things. You can suspend reality in a lot of ways, but in a way, some of it is just too much for plot convenience. But if they take some material and start building around that, maybe they can actually do something. So, yeah, I'm not thrilled about that. But, yeah, you might be right. It might be one of those things that in 2022 we go, yeah, maybe it turned out pretty good.
Yeah, that's why I reserve the right to change my mind. And so we'll revisit this 3 years from now. We'll come back to this. We'll circle back to this bad and see if I was, in fact, right to put it as a bad or if I was gravely mistaken.
Yeah, exactly.
This happens. This next story, I mean, this is probably one of my favorite stories I've ever read in my life.
I can't wait.
There was an old guy arrested for driving across country with his dead wife next to him.
Oh, boy.
Police say...
I want to laugh, but I want to know why he did that.
Police say the 70-year-old was stopped for a traffic violation when an officer discovered Puckett's dead 74-year-old wife, Linda, in the passenger seat. Rodney told police that Linda died at a hotel in Texas during the couple's road trip, so he moved her corpse into the car and continued towards their destination.
Okay.
I mean, you can't stop, right? If you have a trip planned... You gotta make sure you see everything on your trip.
Well, didn't Chevy Chase help us out with this in Vacation?
Exactly.
Right? With when Imogene Coca's character died on the trip and they're like they just dropped her off in Phoenix. Right?
I mean
yeah.
Can you
imagine? They put her on the roof of the car?
Can you imagine maybe this is a way he got through carpool lanes as well?
Exactly.
You know, I don't know what the traffic violation was. All I know is that he was booked into jail for abandonment or concealment of a body, even though the body was neither concealed or abandoned. So.
Yeah, no, he was with her the whole time, and he was like, "We're going." Exactly.
I just picture him is he's staying in a, you know, say, sorry to do this Motel 6, but I'm picturing like a Motel 6 type motel.
Oh.
All right, first floor, she dies in the night, and he's like, well, you know what, I don't want to go through the hassle of the funeral and you know, dealing with having coroners come and take the body. I got a schedule to keep.
Yeah, in the middle of nowhere, Texas, where I'm stopping. I got to keep going.
You know,
let's keep driving.
You do what you got to do. I mean, he was apparently, I mean, I guess they're from Kansas, but he was on his way to Arizona.
Same thing with the Griswolds. They went to Arizona. That's where they dropped off.
I mean, you know, you got to go see the Grand Canyon.
I forget her name, the aunt.
I don't know.
I forget her name. But Edna. That's right, Edna. They dropped her off in Arizona. They dropped her off in a rainstorm in Arizona at the house.
Right.
Then left for Wally World. Well, that's the way it goes. Sorry, but that's what happens.
Yeah, you can't make pit stops. You can't
stop. No, not at all. You got to keep going.
That Grand Canyon's not going to be there forever.
Oh, God.
So,
well, am I going to eat or am I going to starve to death? That's great. Oh, God. When he left that dog on the back bumper.
That was one of the funniest scenes.
Oh, my God. He got pulled over.
The best line was the cop like, I imagine he kept up with you for about a good 2-3 miles.
Exactly. God. Oh, what a movie. That was such a funny movie. I watched that like 6 months ago from start to finish because it's usually one of those movies that's on and you kind of catch it at various spots. One day I was just like, I'm going to watch this again. It is still hilarious.
And it still holds up.
It's still, exactly.
Especially if you're a father of kids and you've taken a road trip.
My favorite scene is when they get to Wally World and they park and they start running to the entrance and there's not a car in the parking lot. And they just think they're the first ones there and they run there and the park is closed. It's the best. That's such a good movie. But yeah, totally. That's a real life Clark Griswold. I bet he said, this is what my wife would have wanted me to do. Not give
exactly.
up the trip. She wouldn't want me to go to the hassle of calling somebody and dragging.
She wants me to take her to the Grand Canyon. She wants me to take her to, sightsee one last time. Bonus, no yapping.
Yeah, no, not at all. No yapping. And you get to listen to whatever you want on the radio.
Exactly.
Oh, God, that's the best.
Just taking a vacation with the wife.
But I will say, though, that's a little creepy. Like, I don't know.
A little?
It's just a dead body.
It's a lot creepy, dude.
You're all by yourself on the road and it's just a dead body.
One of the things that happened in road trips? Smells. The car starts to smell after a few days. Now you throw a dead body in there in the heat. Come on now.
My God, that is a great, is a good one at the end to close it out. It's the good, the bad, and the dumb. It's SB Nation Radio.
Hi, it's Mike Kersing. Let's Talk Wheels, an automotive tip brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. Summer's here. We've all heard about the risk of overheating our bodies, but what about our cars and trucks? One of the fastest ways to destroy an expensive engine or transmission is to overheat it. If you're on vacation this summer and moving a heavy load, like a trailer or the mother-in-law, you need to be aware of your engine coolant and oil temperature gauge. And if you have one, the transmission fluid temperature gauge. You need to know what's normal for your vehicle, and if you see the gauge is rising, you need to pull over, let it idle, and cool down. Getting in a hurry can cost you a lot of time and money. Can't tell you how many times I've seen drivers kill engines or transmissions simply by pushing their vehicles too hard. It's a good idea to have both serviced before your trip, just for insurance. Hey, it's only money, yours. Have a great summer. Stay cool. Mike Kersing, Let's Talk Wheels, brought to you by our great friends at Jeep. For more tips, go to letstalkwheels.com. That's the new letstalkwheels.com. See you next week.
Every legend starts somewhere, and yours can start today at the Jeep Celebration Event. With great deals on the most legendary SUV lineup, explore the unknown in the unforgettable luxury of Jeep Grand Cherokee, the most awarded SUV ever. Be prepared to take your adventures even farther with up to 31 mpg highway in Jeep Cherokee. Experience the joy of open-air freedom like never before through the available panoramic dual-pane sunroof of Jeep Compass. And no matter where your travels might take you, Jeep Wrangler, the 2019 Motor Trend SUV of the Year, is built to get you there. Start building your legend today. Hurry in for a great deal at the Jeep Celebration Event. Jeep Grand Cherokee has received more awards over its lifetime than any other SUV. EPA estimated 4-cylinder 4x2. Actual mileage may vary. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us at SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. PGA Championship starts Thursday, Bethpage in New York. It's a public course. It's one of the hardest courses, though, that's out there. It's rated one of the top courses in the country, et cetera. It's hosted two U.S. Opens. It's going to host the Ryder Cup coming up, and now it's got a PGA Championship. Beautiful layout on Long Island. But think about this for a second. All of the young guns in golf, right? We all know their names, right? Ricky, Rory, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Justin Thomas, Patrick Reed. I'm leaving out a couple, but you know who I'm talking about. This is the first major that they're going to where Tiger Woods is Tiger Woods, right? Before, it was, hey, Tiger's playing, okay. But this is the first time that the power of Tiger Woods is on the course, in the crowd, in the media, just the atmosphere of the event. That doesn't mean Tiger wins. It doesn't mean Tiger is even competitive. Who knows? What we'll see as the tournament plays out. But for these guys, this is the first time they're feeling that.
They didn't get to feel that at all. Sorry. From 2008 all the way through. They didn't get to feel any of that. They didn't get to see it. Tiger disappeared in probably 2009 in November. And he had the situation with the marital fallout and was going back to the Masters, sort of a friendly confine. He wasn't competitive, went through all sorts of injuries. So he had disappeared as these guys were moving up the ranks and moving up into the golf world and winning their own major championships. But now they get to experience this on another level, right? The attention to their sport is now going to be at an all-time high. And it took Tiger winning the Masters to set the stage up for this. Because again, even at the Masters, it was like, oh, Tiger's been competitive lately. Masters should be, but still, we didn't really feel what we felt until he won it. It'll be interesting to see how these guys play it out because they didn't. David Duval had a funny comment because Rory and some of the guys were asked about Tiger and they all said, you know, we're really excited to see Tiger playing it, you know, at his peak game. And, you know, we really want Tiger at his best or whatever. And David Duval says, hell you will. I mean, he remembers playing. I mean, David Duval remembers playing the best golf he possibly could play. And Tiger's still winning tournaments, still winning majors. You know, that's how dominant he was. Now, I don't think Tiger's at that level of dominance yet, but it'd be interesting to watch how the atmosphere around this tournament is going to be ratcheted up a couple of notches because Tiger is back, essentially, into winning tournaments and championships. SB Nation Radio.